can count. I have called you mine. You have stood by me in my
life from New York City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios, New York City. You can watch today's show by going to ustream.tv, search for Gary Null. Also, for the tens of thousands of people who use the telephone to listen to this program, we're number one in North America, Canada, and South America of 2,500 different radio stations. Largest audience right here listening over the telephone. That number, 712-432-7231, 712-432-7231. Today, no guest. Instead, we call this talk back. Throughout the hour, you'll have an opportunity to call in and ask questions, offer challenges, share insights. Our number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Now, before your calls, I'll be talking about why a daily serving of beans, legumes, lentils are so good for your cholesterol. Also, how you can end up lowering your risk of heart disease. We're going to talk about higher vitamin C levels can help prevent a stroke, how creatine monohydrate is good for Huntington's disease. Also, how you should think twice before you have that sugar that you're going to have. New research on sugar. And also, younger U.S. workers benefit from the Mediterranean diet. A more in-depth classroom on the air today about melatonin and getting all the benefits. Now, you know of it because it helps with sleep. But you know it helps with cancer, many other conditions. Dr. Julia Scope will give us some insights. Also, all of us are concerned about our brains, especially if you're over the age of 40. How can we prevent cognitive decline, reducing the danger of the silent neurological decline that's happening, by Dr. Edward Rosick. Then from our environmental segment today, climate change and inequality is brewing. Now, we have something that's interesting because it's from the head of the World Bank. You haven't heard about it. I'll share it with you and why we should pay attention. An in-depth discussion about the death and extinction of bees. Now, as a certified organic farmer, as someone who has used the Fertiller Farm upstate New York that I had for a long time as a teaching environment, how I created the first food co-op in the eastern United States, the High Falls Food Co-op, which is still there and booming, and taught agricultural classes every week during the summer to thousands of people over the summer, from seed to salad, even goat's dairy. But I've also been keeping bees. I'm sure many of you have photographs of the day that I showed you how to live in balance with the bees, and I was opening up a beehive and showing you how to extract the honey, and I had all these thousands of bees all over my body. I've never been stung, not once. So what lesson can we learn about those of us who are working in cooperation with bees instead of what everyone else is doing, exploiting them? We better pay attention, because one-third of all the food we eat could go extinct if the bees cannot pollinate. I'm not sure time will permit, but if it does, double dipping. Doctors paid to promote drug companies that fund their research. So when you see a doctor on television as an expert, and they're talking about why you should be using statins or some form of anti-inflammatory, or maybe some psychiatric antidepressant, we're never told that that doctor's research or the doctor's lecture stipends are coming from a particular pharmaceutical company. We should. I consider it unethical for people to be on television promoting something without telling us their financial interest in it. Also, from the environment, there's a lot of pollution going on at the state levels. We, the people, are interested in identifying gas hydrofracking pollution, nuclear pollution, oil pollution, water pollution. But ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, is working in every state to change the laws at the state that would allow polluters to pollute without any challenge. I'll give you the latest on that. So let's begin. For those of you who have shifted to a plant-based diet, I'm sure that you have found a wide variety of beans and peas, and like chickpeas or lentils. If you go to a Indian store, and if you're around, we're all over the world with this show, but if you go in Manhattan to Lexington Avenue, downtown, in the 20s and teens, you'll find a number of Indian supermarkets. You walk in the door and you know that you're in a different environment. The smells, all the different curries, hundreds of different spices and seasonings that you will never find anywhere else. And the lentil, the different dal, what's called a dal soup, they make those in such tasty ways. Here's the latest on why we should pay attention to these servings of lentils, legumes, chickpeas. Quote, clinical nutrition and factor modification at St. Michael's Hospital. Each one serving a day of beans, peas, chickpeas, or lentils can significantly reduce bad cholesterol and therefore the risk of cardiovascular disease. But we're not eating many of these. We could easily, quote, double our consumption of these pulses. This was published in the Canadian Medical Association Journal, equivalent to our Journal of the American Medical Association. So we need to have one serving, which is about 130 grams, or about a 3/4 cup. That's not much. And yet we're eating less than half a serving a day. Now also for diabetics or pre-diabetics, beans help keep your protein and amino acids in balance, but also they're low on the glycemic index that will not spike your sugar. So for people who thought that they had to eat hamburgers and steaks and pork chops, no, eat beans to maintain a healthy blood sugar level. And there was a review of 26 separate randomized controlled trials to show that the LDL cholesterol, that's the bad cholesterol, went down when people were eating the beans. Now that's beans, but new research on peaches has just come out, published in the Journal of Nutritional Biochemistry. This was done at Agricultural Life Research at Texas A&M University. Quote, a new study from researchers at Texas A&M indicates eating 2 to 3 peaches a day could slow the spread of breast cancer in women. That's very important. Now why? Because they found a particular phytonutrient in the peaches that inhibits cancer spreading. By the way, there are over 700 varieties of peaches, and they generally are harvesting between May and through September. Most people think of a peach as something tasty. They don't think of it of how it can impact disease, but it can. I just planted 47 peach trees this past week because I'm a big believer in we should be doing more to grow our own food. Peaches are hardy. They're easy to grow. You can get a 15-gallon peach tree to start. Probably run you around $19 to a high of $45. And get good quality soil. You could put this in your own backyard or on a roof if you have a large enough pot to put it in. And what you do is you first put a little sand, about 6 inches of sand, at the bottom of a hole, especially if you have any clay in the soil. Then you put really rich quality growth soil, potting soil, but put it 1 foot under the plant and 1 foot around the plant, 1 foot. And then when you pack in your topsoil, put mulch on top. That way, if it rains, water goes through the soil, through the sand, and doesn't cause rotting of the roots. It takes under half hour to plant a peach tree. And if you get a 15-gallon one, it can grow peaches the same year. And then let nature do what it does, and you'll have wonderful peaches. And each year, if you fertilize, and I believe in fertilizing plants every month, every 4 weeks, put down fertilizer, but not chemical fertilizer, natural fertilizer. That strengthens the immune system of the plant. If you want plants that are resistant to disease, then make their immune system strong. Normally what happens is they tell you, take a little bit of milorganite, which is an artificial fertilizer, and throw it in a hole. They'll say, oh, maybe a quarter of a coffee, a can, and that's it. And then you wonder why so many people have diseased trees or that trees don't grow. So eat two peaches. Now, you might think, well, three peaches, that's a lot of peaches to eat. All right, then how about doing this? How about juicing the peaches? Three juiced peaches is one 12-ounce glass of juice. That's a small glass. But you're getting, in the juice, you're getting the anti-cancer benefit. Next up, there's a multiple study published in the peer-reviewed journal PLOS ONE that shows that the omega-3 fatty acids, and especially the DHA fraction, are really good for you and can turn off inflammation in your brain, in your heart, in your muscles, in your liver, and your kidneys. This is going to help people with kidney disease, with liver disease, with heart disease, and with brain inflammation. They looked at 68 separate studies, thousands of people, and they found that it really does turn off inflammation. Now, almost every disease that we can mention today has some form of inflammation attached. For example, you can't have cancer if you don't have inflammation. It is the inflammation, the cytokines, the prostaglandins, the free radicals caused when you eat a hamburger, a hot dog, french fries, pizza, alcohol, toast, a muffin, sugar. That causes inflammation. The inflammation then attacks the cell. As the cells are attacked, many times there's a deformity in the DNA. A deformed DNA that cannot be repaired or replaced then ends up as cancerous. It doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen with one assault. But then again, we don't just do something wrong once. If we like a particular food, we have it every day. I remember where I was growing up, people would frequently, the older people, would have toast with butter on it, cup of coffee, and frequently that was it. Or they'd have bacon, eggs, and toast. Well, that toast, the way that it's prepared first is a bread. It's just white flour. That's nothing but a sugar. Then as you toast it, you change the chemical constituency to what are called acrylamides. Those are impossible for the body to properly digest. There's virtually no nutrition in this toast. And the fact that you've burned it means that now you're going to create some really serious inflammation. And then when you drink coffee with the toast, you're creating gastric reflux, or GERD. And that's going to inflame your esophagus. And it's going to inflame the stomach and make you more susceptible to E. pylori, Helicobacter, that can lead to stomach cancer. And you try to get someone who enjoys their toast in the morning with their coffee, ask them to change and see what percentage, 1%, 2% might change. Most won't, but you should. So if you know someone who is not going to change, then at least get them to take the omega-3 fatty acids after a meal, because I can help turn down a lot of that inflammation. We're not taking enough vitamin C. There was a study done back in the 1970s. The person who reported on that study was a Dr. Erwin Stone. And he was so influential to Linus Pauling becoming interested in vitamin C. It was not the person who discovered ascorbic acid and won the Nobel Prize in chemistry for it, Albert St. Georgi, who I knew and interviewed. Rather, it was this man named Stone. Stone came up with a study that was really remarkable. And I spoke to him. He said, Gary, you have goats. I said, yeah, I have goats. He said, do you ever notice that the goats never get sick, never get cancer? I said, yeah. And they live long lives and they eat everything? Yep. He said, how much vitamin C do you think that a small goat requires in a day? I said, well, goats produce their own vitamin C with a form of reduction of glucose in the liver. Humans can't. Primates can't. They have to take their vitamin C. And everybody else, like cows, horses, lions, they all can get their vitamin C by producing it. He said it's 20 to 40,000 milligrams. 20,000 for a small goat, 40,000 for a large one. Now, you take a little 20-pound goat, and if they're making 20,000 milligrams a day, the body is saying this is how much we need. Imagine what a 150-pound person should be consuming a day, because they're consuming a lot more toxins. And I thought about that, and he was right. So I began to do a lot of studying on vitamin C. And I contacted two people. One person was a Dr. Klenner down in North Carolina. And Dr. Klenner was, at that time, the only medical doctor using high-dose vitamin C to help a wide range of people, including alcoholics, people suffering from hepatitis and sclerosis of the liver. He was using what was considered an unusually high amount, 50,000 milligrams per patient. About 10 years later, another doctor on the West Coast, Dr. Robert Cathcart, would be the first doctor to use high-dose vitamin C intravenous for persons suffering with AIDS-defining illnesses, including pneumocystis greenii pneumonia. Now, I knew Cathcart well, interviewed him, filmed him many times, and when I was out there, we both went to the Linus Pauling Institute, and a Dr. Jawala, who was head of virology, showed us how he could kill viruses, including HIV virus, using quercetin and vitamin C. I then was working with a lot of persons with AIDS-defining illnesses, all told over 1,200 people with full-blown AIDS I work with, and every day of the week, 7 days a week. And I was getting them to get through the medical doctors who oversaw the protocols, 200,000 milligrams of vitamin C up to that, building up gradually, plus a lot of other nutrients and herbs and bitter melon juice, you name it, it was in their protocol. But they had the highest level of recovery of any group of persons suffering with AIDS that I'm aware of in history. And, in fact, so successful were these people that they were invited on PBS National, on Tony Brown's Journal, and eight of them, over a period of 4 years, appeared and gave their stories and how they did. But vitamin C was at the heart of all of it. Yes, had to clean up the diet and the lifestyle, but this would not have happened without vitamin C. I saw people improve with terminal cancer, vitamin C. So it is my opinion that we're not using vitamin C at the levels that we should for a lot of people suffering from conditions that could be benefited. This is the latest. This is from the American Academy of Neurology, and this is at their annual meeting. Quote, higher vitamin C levels linked to lower risk of stroke. Quote, scurvy is caused by vitamin C deficiency, specifically a plasma vitamin C concentration of less than 11 micromoles per liter may have hemorrhagic manifestations. Vitamin C depletion, less than 38 micromoles per liter, associated with cardiovascular diseases and could increase intracellular stroke. End quote. Now, what they're saying is that if you have too little vitamin C, you're at risk of a stroke. Therefore, the more vitamin C, the less risk you are of a stroke, of a particular type of stroke. But also, we know that vitamin C thins the blood, just like aspirin. But where aspirin causes bleeding and causes about 20,000 deaths a year from bleeding, vitamin C actually heals the body of bleeding. and ulcers, and has a hundred other things that it really does nicely. So here's a major organization talking about vitamin C at higher doses. That's good news. And finally, before I take your calls, a study at Massachusetts General Hospital has uncovered the benefit of creatine in delaying the symptoms of the inherited neurodegenerative disorder known as Huntington disease in asymptomatic adults. So that's good news. They use 30 grams per day for 6 months, followed by 12 months open-label period in which some of the participants who received a placebo were switched to creatine. At the end of the placebo double-blind study, there was this, quote, the rate of atrophy in the brain's cortex and striatum among the pre-manifest Huntington disease carriers was slower among those who received creatine than those who received the placebo. That is good news, because we have a lot of people suffering from Huntington's. Oh, and one other thing I want to mention, that an article appearing in PLOS One shows the protective effect for a Mediterranean diet. Quote, an abundance of fruit, vegetables, whole grains, nuts, fish, and olive oil against a risk of cardiovascular disease. And this was specifically in a group of Midwestern firefighters. They work with 780 male firefighters using the Mediterranean diet. They found that there was a 35% lower risk of metabolic syndrome compared to those who weren't using it, and a 43% lower risk of weight gain than the others. Quote, our study adds more evidence showing the health benefits of a Mediterranean diet even after adjusting for exercise and body weight. That's good news. And sugar. Sugar's bad. I have a major article on sugar, definitive. It has dozens of citations in the peer-reviewed literature. So if you have an issue with someone who thinks that sugar is not harmful, I suggest you give them a copy of the article to read. This is the latest from the Journal of American Medical Association's Internal Medicine. This is a study, quote, suggests that adding sugar to the diet could significantly increase the risk of dying, I repeat, increase the risk of dying from cardiovascular disease, the leading cause of death in the developed world. Researchers at the CDC evaluated data from participants in the National Health and Nutrition Examination surveys, and they showed that those who have the sugar end up dying quicker, so almost twice as fast. So if you want to live a longer life, get rid of the sugar and live a longer life. I also want to share the importance of melatonin, because melatonin is demonstrated, according to Dr. Julia Scope, to have life-saving benefits that far exceed its common use as a sleep aid. Now, most Americans are not getting a good night's sleep. Why? Five reasons. They're simple. We're eating too late going to bed. You shouldn't eat anything within 4 hours because you want the stomach empty when you go to bed. But if you really get hungry and you have to have something, this is really easy. Take some ice water and put a teaspoon of lemon juice in it and drink it down. Kills the appetite immediately. If you have to have some physical food, have some organic popcorn. That otherwise you're raising the blood sugar, and when you raise the blood sugar, you're taking the body into an anabolic state, and the body should be in a catabolic, breaking down, rest, recovery, cleanse, and detox state, not high-level energy. So it's, in effect, when you eat before you go to bed, it's like putting your foot on the gas pedal and the brake simultaneously. Two, we take our problems to bed with us and then we think about them. It's very important that before you go to bed, sit and write down the problems that you want to address the next day. Write them down and then say to yourself, I'm going to address these in the morning. So at least you're not pondering them as you sleep, or try to. Third, any form of cell phone that you've been using can overstimulate and cause inflammation in brain cells. That adversely affects the secretion of melatonin, and that's really harmful. Fourth, we use our computers. Our computer is throwing off an electromagnetic pulse that disrupts the circadian rhythms, disrupts our sleep cycle. But now combine using a computer and a cell phone, and you have a double negative. And fifth, we're sleeping with light on. People get so used to having noise on. I know some people can't go to sleep unless they have a television on, a radio on, or a light on. You really need total darkness. And if you can't get total darkness, then put a simple mask on over your eyes. They're made out of felt. They're very soft, or some material. And that way it blocks out the light. So anyhow, we need to get beyond this because, and here's why we should pay attention. Researchers have shown that melatonin's impressive ability to control oxidative damage in systems throughout the body can reduce the trauma of brain injury, prevent heart muscle damage, offer neuroprotective, increase cognitive function, and reduce the toxic effects of chemotherapy while enhancing its benefits. Cumulatively, these findings add up to important new roles for melatonin. It's extremely versatile, and it's also strongly anti-inflammatory. In fact, melatonin's powerful anti-inflammatory effects are similar to those of commonly used non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, such as ibuprofen, but without any of the harmful side effects. And so if you have any inflammation in the body, arthritis, bursitis, you want melatonin. It also can protect against brain damage, brain injury. Brain injury from stroke or trauma can quickly destroy one's neurological function. Melatonin is showing important therapeutic benefits for this serious condition due to its powerful free radical scavenging and anti-inflammatory effects. And all types of serious brain injuries, including traumatic brain and spinal cord injury, ischemic and stroke, atherosclerosis, neurodegenerative diseases. So all that can be helped. And also dramatic advances have revealed that melatonin prevents many cognitive declines with aging. So if you want to have a better brain longer, anywhere from 1 to 5 milligrams of melatonin about an hour before you go to bed. That's our more in-depth discussion for today. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome you all. I'm Gary Noll, and thank you to all of the stations around the United States, in fact, around the world that carry this program. We have people listening on almost every country, and a lot of them from Canada and the United Kingdom and Ireland. We're going to take calls now for those of you in North America, including Canada, at 888-874-4888. Before we go there, just a few program announcements. We started today meeting with our running club, those who just want to get into shape, and those who want to train for the New York City Marathon. Next week, we'll be meeting on Sunday at 9 o'clock at 5th Avenue and 90th Street in Central Park. We meet and new people can come. There's no charge for the next 3 weeks. And then we have a cutoff because then we're into our serious training. So we look forward to seeing you. Also, we have an epidemic in the United States that people are having trouble with personal identity crisis, relationship problems. They don't know who they are. We have younger people who are confused because the way that many of us, certainly those of us who are baby boomers, when we got out of college, we had jobs, we had opportunity, we could easily afford with our job to buy a home, we were living some form of the American dream. Today, kids more often than not get out of college and they have debt. 55% don't have jobs. And needless to say, they have a lot of insecurity. We have more people today taking tranquilizers and antipsychotic medication than ever before in American history. 25% of all women over the age of 25 are now taking some form of psychiatric medication on a daily basis. We're having all forms of crisis in our life. So this coming Saturday at 3 p.m., I'm going to share some insights that I've never had before, because these are new insights to understanding how we can approach all problems with a completely different perspective. This came to me recently. I've been working on it, and I'm very excited by what I can share. This is as important as an original insight as the Life Energies was 15 years ago, when I did a book and a documentary on it and had dozens and dozens of lectures on it. And that's radically changed a lot of people's perspective. So if you want to stop being a victim, if you don't want to be the beautiful deer with an arrow in your neck and suffering, because that's how a lot of people see themselves, if you don't want to just have a faulted story of woe, if you want to have a wonderful, beautiful, happy, and thriving creative life, to be liberated from your fears, insecurities, and look at life differently, then this will benefit you. All of my lectures are always packed, and I'm filming this. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to do an audio hookup so people all over the world can listen to it who can't be there. So space is limited. If you'd like to join me, you can call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, and I'll let you know later in the week if I'm going to be able to have those of you who can't be in there in person be able to at least listen to it. If not, I am filming it for a documentary on the theme, and I'll share it with you. Also today, we're posting dozens of photographs from the very successful party we had. We had all kinds of people coming and going all night long. It was wonderful. Plus a video. Not the best video, because the person doing the video who gave it to us didn't have lights on. But there's enough in there that I guess about maybe 200 people you can see. And it's fun. So that's going up today. You can see that by going to blog.garynull.com. Blog.garynull.com. It's fun. Now to our environmental segment of our program. Climate change and inequality brewing global social upheaval. This is from Common Dreams. Quote, the president of the World Bank, Jim Yong Kim, is warning that the combined crisis of planetary climate change and rising global inequality in a highly interconnected world will lead to the rise of widespread upheaval as the world's poor rise up in clashes over access to clean water and affordable food, resulting in increased violence and political conflict. In an interview before the World Bank summit, Kim predicts that the battles over food and water will bring together some of the worst crisis that we've ever seen. And he predicts this will be within 5 years. I predict it'll be within 2 years. This is a direct result of warming planet that world leaders have done little to address, despite warnings. Quote, the water issue is critically related to climate change. This according to Kim telling The Guardian. People say that carbon is the currency of climate change. Water is the teeth. Fights over water and food are going to be the most significant direct impacts of climate change in the next 5 years. There is no question about it, end quote. Now, mind you, the World Bank has access to all the top researchers in the world. So if you're the head of the World Bank, you have your pulse on what's happening. You know the truth, whether you act upon it in a responsible way or not. On the one hand, I'm glad to say that he has said something as a major policymaker with enormous influence. Here's the bad part of this. He and the World Bank should engage in a mea culpa because of the errors of the powerful institution he runs including a global push to privatize drinking water resources and utilities. And so it's the World Bank that has been saying we need more private companies and more billionaires and their syndicates controlling the water, so therefore they can manipulate. He didn't say that, but he has been pushing for privatization of water. Well, then when he's saying that we're going to have a war over water, and at the other side of his mouth, he's saying, but we really need all the water to no longer be for the commons, we the people, direct access. We want to be able to have a Nestle or a big company like that that we're affiliated with come in and be able to buy up all the water rights. So when you want a drink of water, you got to pay him for it. So that's the contradiction of the World Bank. One more reason why I'm suggesting, encouraging those of you who are of a mind to start planning on the next step in your life and get yourself into the country where you have access to clean, unlimited amounts of water and quality land to grow your own food. This is important. This is Death and Extinction of the Bees by Josham Hagponim from Global Research. Quote, scientists have recently reported that mass extinctions of marine animals may soon be occurring at alarming rapid rates than previously projected due to pollution, rising water temperatures, and loss of habitat. Many land species also face a similar fate for the same reasons. But perhaps the biggest consequence and of all that's happening and a foreboding danger of all that we're facing is the loss of the global honeybee population. What will happen when the bees population dies is going to impact all of us at the highest level of our food chain, posing an enormously grave threat to human survival. Since no other single animal species plays a more significant role in producing the fruits and vegetables, I might add in the nuts, that we humans commonly take for granted, yet require nearly daily to stay alive. The greatest modern scientist, Albert Einstein, once prophetically remarked, quote, mankind will not survive the honeybee's disappearance for more than 5 years. Since 2006, beekeepers have been noticing their honeybee populations have been dying off at increasingly rapid rates. Subsequently, researchers have been scrambling to come up with an accurate explanation for an effective strategy to save the bees and in turn save us Homo sapiens from extinction. Recent harsh winters stay freezing cold well into the spring have been instrumental in decimating the honeybee population. In Iowa, 70% decimation, destruction of the honeybees. And the Dakotas, Montana, Minnesota, the same. The northern plains, midwestern states that have regionally also produced the nation's most honey have been severely hurt by the long, harsh winters in the last couple of years. Florida, as the third largest honey producer, and especially California, always among the top promoters, have been hit especially hard by decreasing bee colony populations. In 2006, when the problem of bee loss first was noticed, California was right up at the top, with North Dakota producing nearly twice as much honey as the next state, South Dakota. But its bee numbers have incurred such heavy losses that now California's honey production has fallen by 50% in just 6 years. Last month's Newsweek reported that honeybees in trucks migrate to various regions of the country to pollinate an estimated $40 billion worth of the nation's agricultural produce each year. This means that every third bite of food we eat comes as the result of bees and other pollinators. USDA Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack stated that more than 130 fruits and vegetables that make up a nutritious diet are cross-pollinated with honeybees. Commercial bees raised on farms and then shipped to other farms in the country used to pollinate, along with wild bees, are responsible for the pollination of 80% of all food in the United States. In the last 5 years, 30% of all the bees in America have died. That's 30%. Though the rate of bee dot population is growing every year, 42% more last year than the year before, even the current annual rate, the estimated monetary loss is $30 billion a year. That's $30 billion, With so much at stake, efforts to investigate and uncover reasons for this sudden global pandemic have been robust. Well, the EPA has finally come up with the causes, including a parasite called variola, plus poor nutrition, multiple viruses, shrinking habitats, and first and foremost, pesticides. And the study last year found 35 pesticides and fungicides, some at lethal doses in the pollen collected from bees that were used to pollinate food crops in five U.S. states. In another research study, bees that contacted pollen contaminated with fungicides ended up 300% more likely to get infected by a parasite closely associated with colony collapse disorder. The results of a new study conducted by Mark Brown of Royal Holloway University in London, released several weeks ago, found that wild honeybee populations are also disappearing at a similar rate to the domestic honeybee. Why? Because pesticides are sprayed everywhere, but also because in all of these gigantic bee colonies, they're feeding them high fructose corn syrup. And the bees eat that because they have nothing else to eat in the wintertime, and that kills them. You'd think they would be smarter. They're not. Now, my thoughts on this. I'm a beekeeper. At one time, I had 144 hives. My original hive is still thriving today. What do I do? When the hive is full of honey, I open up the hive, I take the honey, and then I refeed it back to the bees. So every day, there is about a pint of raw, unheated, organic honey given back to them. This gives them food that's nutritious, and also I don't move my beehives. The stress of moving on tractor trailers from one part of America to another makes it very, very stressful for the bees. And then you're putting them into an environment that's genetically polluted, massive pesticides. And the poor bee frequently ends up bringing these pesticides back, and then it impacts their stomach, and they starve to death because it kills their appetite. It also weakens their immune system, so they're more susceptible to the mites and the viruses. Whereas those of us who don't transport our bees, feed them organic honey, don't spray any toxins, don't have electrical signals in the air, electromagnetic pulses that can disrupt their own sensory devices, they thrive. You can look at my own bees being fed raw honey, thousands of them, and you just take a 6-foot pole and you put a pan on the top of the pole, and each day you put the honey in. Watch them come. They're actually waiting in the morning for the honey. So then you put honey in one group and you put high fructose corn syrup in another. You let one stay in a non-polluted environment and put them in another group in a very polluted environment. And then you feed them the wrong food. Watch what happens. It's going to collapse. So with all of our scientists, with all of our bureaucrats, and with all of our genetic engineering dollars being spent, with the control over government policymakers, little wonder that they'll keep looking for a solution instead of simply getting rid of genetic engineered food, getting rid of the pesticides, because the future is for sustainable agriculture. But I guess it will take the entire collapse, which will happen in the next 5 years, of the entire bee population in the United States. And when you start losing 1/3 to 1/2 of all the food produced in the United States, when you have massive food shortages, therefore the cost of food that you have is going to skyrocket, hyperinflation in food prices, then maybe it'll get someone's attention. We know the truth, we're just not willing to work on it. I'm Gary Nall, and if anyone in the audience, any group, wants information on natural beekeeping, happy to share it with you. Now, let's go to the phones. Let's say hello to George in New York. Hi, George, your turn.
Gary, it was a pleasure seeing and listening to the instructional and inspirational speeches that were made this morning by you and John Q and Jimmy, at the National Walking and Running Club. That was great. But I call to ask you a question. How healthy and safe would it be to go on a 40-day organic green juice fast?
It could very easily put you in the hospital. It would be very irresponsible. Your body would be starving for amino acids. You would catabolize your own tissue because the body needs proteins, and you'd start breaking down the muscle in your body. Whoever came up with that idea is not aware of how dangerous it is. Never do that. If you want to do a one-day juice fast where you have a smoothie in the morning, so you have your protein, your essential fatty acids from coconut oil and flaxseed oil, and some juices, that's fine.
Okay.
And then you drink that throughout the day. But otherwise, no, you do not ever, let me restate this so you're clear on this, you never go on a fast where you're challenging the body, because let's say that you're not aware that you're a diabetic. Let's say you have metabolic syndrome. You could throw yourself into a glucose coma. You could cause your heart to be challenged because you're not getting the nutrients that the heart requires. So don't do this. It's dangerous, irresponsible, okay? All the best, George. And let's also say hello to Tim from New Jersey. Hi, Tim. You're on the air, Tim. Please speak up. Oh, Tim hung up there? All right. Let's say hello to Luann. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, we have had a firestorm of emails about a particular situation that's gone on in Nevada. And I'm going to preface this by saying this. For the past 5 years, you've been talking about the fact that with all the tyranny going on in the world, and especially our own society turning into a police state, that it's not going to be the rich and famous, it's not going to even be the middle class who stands up against these tyrants called now our government. And this particular situation where this farmer in Nevada had his cattle grazing, and the government just passed some errant law saying that now he has to pay grazing taxes, and he didn't pay the taxes. So they actually had SWAT teams going in, rounding up his baby calves and the cattle grazing, starving them, killing them, and rounding them up and putting them in a building. And finally, all of the people, like in a 75-mile radius, these are the poor farmers, the local farmers. They all got their guns, and they all came around, and they stood up to these tyrants, and they chased them away. And now they got the cattle out, they got them back to the farmer. And to me, this is just a historic moment of showing that American people can stand up to a tyrannical government. And isn't that the way this country was first started? So I'd like to get your perspective on this.
Well, Luann, you seem to be extremely concerned, and rightly so. I have a different perspective on it, and I'd like to share that with you and with the audience. First, this is really not about cattle grazing over state, not federal property, and a man who refused to pay grazing fees over a period of years because he felt that the grazing had been going on in his family for generations and that it was not impacting in any negative way the land. And so he fought them, and he lost in court. So that's a separate issue, the legality of that position. I see this as something more significant, and hence tonight at 7 o'clock on the Progressive Commentary Hour, I'm going to be spending an hour on this topic with some really insightful constitutional lawyers, ethicists, and people who are experts on the Bureau of Land Management, a representative of Native American issues, because here's the backstory that no one is focusing on. This audience clearly understands the significance of overreach by government or corporate interest. Working together, it's called fascism. we hear words such as corporatocracy, fascism. We hear about judicial power that exceeds extraordinary power. What it means is this, that the Bureau of Land Management is the same organization that did not think twice about displacing thousands upon thousands of Native American children, taking them from their homes and putting them into special orphanages where they were not allowed to associate with their culture. English was the only language spoken, and frequently the people who were brought in to teach didn't even know the native languages. Now, mind you, they were taken off reservations. They also would have I remember at the time, I was writing one of my first books on Native Americans, my second one, Secrets of the Great White Buffalo. This was 10 years before that. I wrote Stopping the All-American Genocide Machine, how, in effect, the American government had betrayed 1,334 treaties they had signed with Native Americans. They simply lied, and if there was land that had minerals on it, coal or gold or oil, they simply moved the Indians off, even though they had guaranteed this would be their permanent home on these reservations, without any thought about the circumstances for the Native Americans to have even a sustainability, frequently putting them in places where there was no topsoil, it was just desert. This is a story that has not really been told, and all for the benefit of those who controlled the body politic from behind the scenes, which we've always had. Well, that same Bureau of Land Management has treated the Native American as nothing more than an object. But also, under the Interior Department, which is a part of this, you have the Bureau of Land Management and the Interior Department working hand in hand. You had 10,000 open pit mines, uranium mines, that were used to get the uranium necessary for the atomic bombs. At no time were the Native Americans, mainly the Navajo, told that this represented a health threat. They were given no protective gear, they were given no monitors, even though they were available, even though the threats were very real. And documents later released under the Freedom of Information Act showed that the American government knew that they were putting these Native Americans in harm's way. Jump forward decades. Decades later, a high incidence of lung cancer and other cancers that are unique to radiation exposure began to happen in people, in the Native Americans. But again, the government denied any responsibility. Only after multiple lawsuits was it revealed through settlements that, yes, the government did know that this was dangerous, but chose not to act in a prudent or responsible way. So you have government agencies that for a long time have abused people, have allowed the land to be exploited. Right now, for example, the average American is not aware of how much of our great forests and our virgin soils are being fracked, are being cut, are being exploited. Take a look in Appalachia, where I come from, where I grew up. Look at look at hilltop mining. Look in Tennessee and Kentucky, especially in West Virginia, and you'll see that these are supposed to be the stewards of our land, and they have done nothing, nothing at all. The water is polluted. It looks just terrible. I was driving through there not long ago on my way to Florida, and you'll see, wow, what went wrong here? In fact, Professor James Hansen has been protesting this for some time. So what we have is we have exploitation on a massive scale. So this has to be exposed. So that's the backstory. of who are the people who are bringing in 200 federal agents, including snipers, to tell this rancher and his friends, we're taking your cattle, you owe us money. You see, if we left the story there, many Americans say, okay, well, he didn't pay the fees for grazing his cattle, and therefore the government has a right to come in and confiscate his cattle to get these back taxes. It's a bigger story than that. And then what about the free speech zone they set up there? A tiny little space where people could say what they had to say. That's not free speech. Think of the Democrat-Republican conventions when, if you wanted to protest, you were blocks away from the actual convention, behind gates, and you were being monitored by national security agents. I thought free speech was anywhere in America. I wasn't aware that they had made it in tiny little protected areas. So we have to deal with our freedom of speech. We have to deal with government bureaucracies that are not serving the common good. And we have to deal with the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. All of this is a part of this story, and that's what I'll be handling. Thank you for raising the issue, but we're already way ahead of it. But I won't be talking about cattle or grazing rights. That's really not the story. I'm Gary Noll. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening, and I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. I keep forgetting when I